So if you lay the AR on it and you say, or the R1 on it, and you say half acre size lots, but it doesn't say how many lots you have to have. In other words, you don't have to fill up the whole property with it, but if you go the AR, your minimum is 1 acre lot sizes. And that's the problem with it.
Plainly, I asked Mr. Dodson what he was going to do with this property. It sounds like it's going to be either or. How would you like to see this board vote?
Consistent with the zoning ordinance.
You were asking us to deny?
I'm just asking you to look at the zoning ordinance. I did vote against this at Planning and Zoning Commission because I did not feel like R1 was appropriate. I didn't think it fit the definition. But you are making your own decisions here. I think that it needs to be, that the decisions need to be based on the zoning ordinance. If we don't base decisions on a zoning ordinance, we don't have a zoning ordinance.
Completely agree.
Thank you.
Cindy, I saw you move to the microphone.
Yes, thank you. I will be short. I am a prairie fanatic and have been for many years. I am not going to get what I want on any decision that is possible here today. So I'm looking at the options, and I see an option of a CAFO, which I don't like for that site. I see the option, and they wouldn't have to have any kind of permission to do this, of putting, say, three big expensive houses on there, and if one of them decides that he wants a 35-acre lot that turns into a tree farm, and the second one wants some mountain bike trails, and the third one wants the biggest mowed lawn in the world, there goes the prairie. So of the rock and the hard place that I see, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I would prefer to have the rezoning with all the conditions that were recommended by the planning and zoning, and with further negotiation with the developer to make things as good as possible for the prairie. If I thought things could remain the way they are now, I wouldn't be saying that. But it's pretty clear to me that they won't. And so between the rock and the hard place, I guess I'm picking reluctantly the hard place. Thank you.
Jenny, thank you very much. Is there anybody else who would like to address us as part of the public hearing for this zoning, rezoning request? Last chance? Okay, we'll close the public hearing, turn to the board for further conversation and options. Board, questions or comments based on what we've heard?
I don't want confinement operation here. Sorry for all of the out there. Okay. I do understand Supervisor Sanders' rationale about the half acre as the total of it. I like the fact that there is a park there in land that's already in conservation reserve. I appreciate that we're possibly looking at 70 acres instead. Cindy, I hope you get some of your remnant plants. I talked to our naturalist, and I see that our director of conservation is in the back room. I know they're going to try their darndest to keep some of those preserved, but also they have big challenges ahead of them. As was referenced on water, and there's a lot that Mother Nature does, and then people come in and do on top that can affect that. Natural prairies, especially if we just rendered. So I'm not really factoring that in. I'm a little bit still in shock that $350,000 is an affordable house, but that, you know, me and my affordable housing that I try to work on is really lower than that. My biggest fear is that of the leapfrog, actually, that the next 160 acres is going to get sold, and then there's going to be somebody come in and use this as the example. But I'm willing to consider with the 70 houses down to the 70, the septic system would have to be a condition for me to vote yes for those areas where you could have one common collection and run your laterals off of that. I am going to reference something that I'm reminded not to reference in a long time, but I was a journalist for a long time here. So I've covered development in the county since 2002, and I have seen the development community sometimes really digging their heels, and Kurt Friedrich has not done this. The opposite has happened, and he's really tried to meet as many goals as he could and still came what is a very unique piece of property with the top topography of it. So that's where I'm going to stand. And I can make a motion, or anybody else want to comment?
If we could talk for just a minute more before you, Marty, anything you want to know? I think Cindy Hillman finds out what I'm speaking where my mind has gone on this. I think Mr. Dodson does this out of necessity for his family, and I respect that. I think quite possibly this is a stretch. I understand that this would be a bit of a burden and a hardship to the city of Gilbert, which I think Gilbert will grow to. Is the likelihood that they will grow this way. It is, as we're watching them grow to the south, as you're seeing the infill with the river down in front of the high school, this community that is expanding. This is probably a little further than I would like to see it too. Don't disagree, but I think that if we look at it with 2018 eyes, I think we will miss when in fact it will be counted.
Gary Hamlin.
Laura, so I'm going to tell you where I think I am and what I think I heard you say.
Okay.
To see if that's where we are. So I am moving toward approval of the rezoning with conditions as presented, except amending condition one. And condition one talks about the whole quarter, and to me, that's kind of a convoluted reference point. I don't know anywhere the county has referenced density per quarter before, and so I threw out there the possibility of no more than one developable lot per acre of total developed ground, understanding that there are going to be half acre lots instead of acre lots, which gives us more open space, right? Which is the step that you referenced. And so I'm suggesting that conditions, all the conditions that are here, be what we put forward, but note the first condition, which is the overall density of future subdivision, shall be consistent with the density of Eagle Ridge subdivision, not to exceed 14 developed lots per quarter. We just change that to the overall density of the future subdivision shall not be more than one developable lot per total net acres of development property.
Total net acres.
Thinking that we're taking out, so it's 160 total acres, but really what we're interested in is what's developable, which, Kurt, what I'm hearing is about 70 acres. Is that right?
So
70 acres. And that's where I am. That's what I heard you saying. Marty, I kind of hear you along that direction. I just want to see if we're getting anywhere closer, then we need to reword that one condition.
Yes, we're very, very close. I'm looking, I thought Margaret James at one point here. Oh, there she is, way back in the hall. Just to make sure, what's the best way, Margaret, to handle the condition about septic when possible, especially on some of those larger lots? Do you want to put in conditions, or is that something you can handle during the planning process?
Margaret James, Environmental Health. Couple options out there. One is to have on-sites for each and every one. Another one is to have on-sites and allow laterals to be in the green space. And the third one is to pipe it so that it all comes down to a lower point in the landscape. And we have one large package plant. And then it would discharge to the lower area there. The advantage to that third option is that it would take all of that water past that sensitive xeric zone for the plants, and it wouldn't overwater them per se.
I'm not sure I heard Kurt offer that option. What I think I heard Mr. Peter's offer was forced in some locations around some of, or where it would direct the water to the remnants, that he would be willing to look at maybe a dual or fourplex. I'm sure that's not the right word, but for those sites, and then the rest would be the single. Is that what I heard?
More than a common discharge, okay, possible. Taking into account that we don't want to overwater some of these drier upland prairie areas, because the real benefit to conservation, Mike standing in the back of the room, and Mike, I'm just going to ask you to affirm if I'm saying this correctly. The real potential benefit to conservation is if we can preserve these native plant species, and the reality is on the higher end, if they get too much water, we're going to lose them anyway.
one thing I really want to add, and I say this at all of the subdivision proposals, is that we are adding a lot of water to that small mini watershed, if you will. It's 300 gallons to about 700 gallons or even more if they're irrigating their lawns per lot. So that's a lot of water being added to that area. That's the problem with the density. If you get the higher density, you're going to get more water.
Thank you, Margaret.
So if the condition added would be to work with our environmental health and planning and zoning department for common collection, common cluster collection system for 4 to 6 homes as a table. That is the condition that I would like to add, correct? Oh, yeah. All right. Common cluster collection system that would have laterals for 4 to 6 singles, laterals for 4 to 6 homes on collection.
Jerry, go ahead.
Yeah, would you mind just restating the first condition just so that I'm clear? Are we talking about total dwellings or?
Total number of developable lots shall not exceed the total number of developable acres. Right, the intent being that we're taking those 90, I don't want the fuzzy math, so if we're taking 90 acres out of this thing, the perceived fuzzy math, how about that? If we take 90 acres out of this thing, we're really talking about 70 developable acres. So let's just keep it clean. We know that the reason that we want to move over to the R1 is so that they can be half-acre lots, they don't have to be acre lots, but we don't want the density that would be on 70 acres to be 140 developable lots according to the R1. We don't want that kind of density.
Could that be, say, to a maximum of 70 developable acres?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else? Now we'd be ready for a motion with conditions as stated.
I make a motion that we approve the rezone and the map. With the conditions as stated today.
Second. We got a motion and a second. Jerry and Emily, are you clear on what we moved and seconded?
I think we're quite clear. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes with conditions. Thank you very much.
This,
all right.
This will be back before you next week at the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Next item. Yeah, okay, so let's talk about this. Next item is in 3 parts. Three separate applications by Longview Farms. We're going to deal with it in one package. Now, at the end, there will be a vote of the supervisors on each of the three individually, but we're going to receive our reports in one package. We're going to hear public comment in one package. We're going to hear from the applicant in one package. And we're going to move through this, and we're going to be here as long as you guys want to be here on two conditions. So there's no requirement that we have this public hearing. This is no break. This is Story County doing what Story County does and going above and beyond. Really in all cases, but specifically as we talk about the master matrix system. So the request of everybody here, you guys have been phenomenal today. That took a lot longer than we expected. I apologize. But we're going to show respect, and we're not going to be disruptive. And those are the only two conditions to us being here. As long as you want to be here, we'll go through it. Let me start with this. There are absolutely no bad people on either side of this, right? The Henrys are not bad people for proposing this. The people that live in close proximity that are concerned about the impact on their lives are not bad people, they're just concerned. And the people that are philosophically opposed to this kind of agriculture aren't bad people, they're just philosophically opposed. And so I'd like us to all keep that in mind as we move through this entire process. So we're going to start by hearing from our civil attorney on what the process that Story County has adopted to work us through this is. Then we're going to hear from Margaret James, who represents the committee that we have that checks all the scoring of the applicant. Then we might have some questions from the board. Then we'll hear from the applicant. We might have some questions from the board. Then we'll move to the public hearing and hear from all of you, anybody who wants to speak to us about this. I need to start with this before Ethan gets going. So about 8 months ago, Laura Supervisor Olson brought to us a request to really dig in and look at what the county does with the master matrix. And so we had a couple of big workshops where we had DNR in, we had producers in, we had interested citizens in, and we looked at every detail. Well, Laura, you really ran that. So just talk us through exactly what we did and what we changed it.
Well, I want to give a shout out to the staff ran it, okay, and organized it. But the thought generating it forward was a way to not have such adversarial conversations and to see what we could do, given all of the law the way it was written, given the matrix the way it stood, to see what could we do locally to at least kind of turn the furnace down a little bit. So we did have, there was a gentleman from the DNR. We had two agriculture professors from Iowa State. I see a couple of faces and the cattle representatives here that spoke during it. We had our staff from our engineering, emergency management, environmental health. Mr. Anderson was there as our civil attorney. I'm going to probably leave out a couple of people, but we really had a robust discussion for about 2 to 2.5 hours for the one that really, I think, went forward to discuss what's in the matrix and what can be done as far as scoring varieties, what limitations or what power would you have of local control. And what we discovered is there's really not a lot of local control. And in the areas where we found that we might have a little, the staff being able to make some judgments, a leeway, having to do somewhat with, say, roads and turnarounds and et cetera, those are not options that people normally took. That usually now how the matrix is presented is that the producers or the confinement owners tend to take the distances, that's what they're paying attention to, the distances are pretty black and white. And so we ended with hopes that dialogue could go forward, and there is cattle producer here in the room who had agreed to work with me. Unfortunately, I couldn't really get some conversations going on my own at the top of it because it was not board sanctioned. So anyway, so that kind of ended up going by the wayside. But I'm glad we had the conversation. It helped clarify, at least in my mind, and I think some other people who attended it on both sides, about what the reality of the situation is right now when it comes to involvement of local government, local control. And I hope it will help for stability here today, too.
Super. Thank you, Morris. Marty, do you have anything to add before we get started?
No, I think that the time that we should spend is listening to the public speak for so long is the determinations that we use to have recommendations placed before us to address the applications that we receive.
And that's exactly where we're going to start. Ethan, talk to us about our process, what the state law tells us, and what we're doing today. And I need to say this, so the restrooms are right out by the elevator. We're not stopping. We're going straight through. There's not going to be a recess. If you need to excuse yourself, we're going to do the same. Please don't take it as we're not listening. It's just going to be time for us to take a quick break. Ethan, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Ethan Anderson with the County Attorney's Office. Thank you for having me here today. I would like to add some additional thoughts to what you and Laura were just commenting on. But perhaps I'll just do the general introduction first and then get into the more details they just talked about. So
Master Matrix, County Role and Responsibilities, found in Iowa Code Chapter 459, and the Iowa Administrative Code 567-65, and as it says there, it provides a process for local input to the County Board of Supervisors, but it's clear from the statute that it leaves a final decision-making power to the Iowa DNR. I want to point out that some of my material on the slideshow here came from IDNR and their publication on the Master Matrix. It's available there online. I'm sure a lot of people here have had a chance to review that and some of the talking points there. So the what you can get from 459 and from from the Administrative Code in Section 65.10 is some shall duties that they impose on the county and a couple of may duties. And so the shall, the first shall duty that the county has is that we have to document receipt of the application. We have to provide a copy to DNR, and Margaret has done so. The next duty you see on there is to provide public notice. DNR provides an official notice form for us to do that. I'm sure everybody's seen that in this case. Margaret's done that. And then the third is the county shall score the Master Matrix. Now, the way Story County does it is different than many other counties. Other counties maybe have one person in planning and zoning or one person to handle this scoring. Story County, back in 2015, decided it would be appropriate to have a committee score these. And the goal there was efficiency. The goal there was to provide those different county departments that have maybe more of a specialty or focus in some of those areas to give their opinion and to have the opportunity to raise those questions. And so that's why you'll see that the county engineer was involved, planning and zoning commission was involved, conservation was involved, the assessor was involved. So we brought kind of all hands to the table to kind of grade this in a committee form. So the committee met, and we reminded the committee, and what we sought to do was to be objective in our scoring. We wanted to be fair in our scoring. We wanted to satisfy that they met what the Master Matrix required. And so to point out, not every question needs an answer. I think everybody's familiar, it needs a minimum score of 440 to pass. It has to have 25% from those three different air, water, community categories. Number four, the next shall option is the county shall visit and accompany DNR on their site visit, and then keep a copy of the inspection available, application available for public inspection. And then the county provides proof of publication. And then, as Rick mentioned to begin with, and I think it's commendable that the board is willing to have a public hearing, that's one of the optional. That's a may requirement under the code in the administrative code. So the county may hold a public hearing to get public comments and support or against the proposed confinement, and then adopt a resolution. They may adopt a resolution with recommendations to DNR. So that resolution is a may, and then we move on to the next shall, and the county shall make recommendations. So this is the county, irrespective of the score, irregardless of whether or not it's a passing or failing score, can make a recommendation. And then finally, the shall submit that score to DNR. And to stress again, DNR has a final say on the permit. Now going back to what Rick and Loris started this discussion with. It was back in July last year when we had, after the July Master Matrix, we had a chance to kind of review design, operation, and maintenance in the definitions section. And so Margaret and I reached out to different people in DNR. I talked to the AG, Attorney General, responsible for advising DNR. And we were looking at whether or not home rule, local home rule, give us an opportunity to impose some level of local control. And as Loris mentioned, we thought there might be an opening. That door was closed to us. As you can see here, we cannot exceed the standards of the Master Matrix itself. We can't exceed the requirements of the administrative code. And we cannot preempt state law. That's a recent case, Seymour. The annotation is sub 55, Northwest 2nd, 537. And that stands for Home Rule a municipality, county, cannot draft or pass an ordinance that expressly or impliedly conflicts with state law. So we have to respect the master matrix that the legislature has given us, and we have to be objective and follow what it says. So examples, the committee met again to score the application on Friday. We met again in response to concerns from ICCI. We got a letter from them, and we thought it appropriate to reconvene the committee and to go through some of those comments. So that's what we did, but to provide an example of some of our discussion, and Margaret may summarize this more later, but one of the things we discussed was question number 12. And question number 12 had to do with the roof, or whether or not this structure was covered. And the contention was that we needed to consider whether or not there was an inspection plan, how it was to be inspected, who was to do the inspection, and what the timetable of inspection was going to be. And as the committee discussed it, we really looked at the question in the master matrix form, and the question did not address inspections. That was not in there, as whether or not it was covered. And we decided then, after the committee discussed it, that that was not required by the matrix, and therefore we're going to disregard that. And then we also discussed question 20. Question 20 has to deal with whether or not there was history, a history of administrative orders or reprimands for this applicant. And we were reading the question, and we had some concerns about how to interpret the question. So Margaret reached out to DNR Legal. I reached out to the AG's office again. And basically their response was, history is history. So if there's no history, there's no history. And that's how they intend to interpret the question, how they intend to grade the question. So if that is our guidance, we said, well, we're here, there is no history. So we, the committee voted to award the points for that category. But these questions get to design, operation, and maintenance. And the committee's role and the committee's objective was to follow what the master matrix itself said. We wanted to do what it said. We wanted to read the questions in light of the master matrix itself in the definition section in the administrative code and make our decisions based on that. We didn't look to add anything to it. In fact, we can't add requirements. Humboldt County had an experience where they attempted to add requirements, local requirements on a master matrix that gave an applicant a failing score. DNR got that application, disregarded everything Humboldt County did, regraded it for a passing score, and approved the construction. So what we need to keep in mind here is when we're thinking about this process, we've been given the master matrix from the legislature. We're going to follow that as a county. I'm going to recommend to the board that it follow the master matrix, and that's what the committee did. And then the board will have to make a decision whether or not to approve or deny. And then I think I'll turn it over to Margaret for any discussion for the discussion of the particulars here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here today. I made my presentation quite short because I'm speaking to a very sophisticated audience. Everyone who has called me is well informed as to the process. So I will go through these as quickly as I can so that we can get to the comments, which I feel is extremely important. Everyone who called asked if it's a done deal. I said, no, it is not a done deal. Your voice is important. We need to hear that. As Ethan talked about earlier, we have a committee that grades these, and we are held
to the requirements of Iowa Administrative Code Chapter 65 when conducting our review. The committee includes Jerry Moore with Planning and Development, Darren Moon, Engineer, Mike Cox, Conservation, Aaron Steele, Planning and Zoning Commission, Wayne Schwickerath, Assessor, Keith Morgan, Emergency Management, Ethan Anderson, who just spoke, and myself. As the department head of the Environmental Health Department, it is my job to steer the committee and to report the committee's findings. So the way I'm going to approach this, all three applications were exactly the same with the exception of two of the questions. Okay. So there's 44 questions total, and they chose 16 or 17 to work with to come up with their score. We cannot sway from those questions. They choose them, and we grade the ones that they choose. The facility name is so it's Longview Corp, and then the, each site is called Richland 10, Richland 28, and Richland 29. The applicant is Scott Henry of Longview Corp. They live in Story County. And the contact person is Brian Ritland of Pinnacle, which is an environmental group, consulting group. Do I have that right, Brian? Okay. Wow, colors aren't real good in this. I just wanted to talk briefly about what we now have in Story County. This data is from DNR. So the, the green triangles are CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations, and the circles are the open feedlots, okay? So it shows 19 feedlots in Story County and 49 CAFOs, which require manure management plans. So all 49 of those are not necessarily huge ones that require master matrix, but they're the between the 500 and above animal units are on that. So there's a lot more smaller farming operations than this. So 13 of those triangles have 1,000 animal units or more. And actually, I just heard from DNR this morning, and 36 then are less than 1,000 out of those spots on the map. And then this is just a screenshot from DNR's Facility Explorer. And as you can see, so Story County is the middle bottom there, and you can see our density compared to Boone County to our west, Marshall to our east, and then Hardin and Hamilton to the north, which have a lot greater confinement density. So as I was saying, these three facilities, these three applications are nearly identical. Each facility is proposing 5,000 finished market hogs with two buildings per site with deep manure pits under the buildings. So 5,000 head times the factor is 0.4 equals 2,000 animal unit capacity, which puts them into this category for the review. So 5,000 actually, so that's 5,000 year-round. So that's actually two harvests, so two rounds of 5,000 pigs. Correct? Okay. So this is just for reference points. So Richland 10 is the northmost star, and it is 3.5 miles south of McCallsburg and 2.25 miles north of Fernald, which is an unincorporated town. The other two, 28, is 1.25 miles north-northeast of Nevada, and then Richland 29 is about 1.5 miles. Straight north of the city limits. This is hard to see, I apologize. I would have made those darker. But ever since the county did the water assessment study, watershed assessment study, we've been trying to focus in more on HUC-12s, which are just units of watersheds. So strangely, each of these are in different HUC-12s. So that top star, so Richland 10, is going in where there's actually three existing sites, with 1,100, 996, and 1,600 animal units capacity. So we've already got a lot of activity for livestock in that particular HUC-12. And then West Indian Creek, they're going in, so that would be Richland 29. 1, 2, 3 already existing there. So it's the Cowsers, Chemlins, H, and K. And so about 800, 2,700, and 1,800 animal units already being raised in that HUC. And then going over to the East Indian Creek HUC, that does not have any in it. Yet. So this will be the first animal confinement in that particular one. All three of these HUCs drain into the, eventually tie up together into the Indian Creek watershed. And then the Indian Creek meets up with Story, or with the Skunk River down in Jasper County. So this is a close-up of Richland 10. Arbitrarily, there's a 1 mile and 2 mile ring radius there. The star shows where the exact, where the facility is going to be. Those filled in shaded areas are the manure management, or manure application sites. Excuse me.
Margaret, can you help me with that a little bit? When you say those filled in for, like, I'm seeing houses on the left hand side.
That's correct. Yes. Yes. So they every 4 years they have to. Well, every year they update, but every 4 years they have to actually submit a map and show us exactly where they plan to put their manure.
I just wanted to make sure the little blue dot.
Okay, and then yes. So the dots, blue and green dots, are wells. The green ones are geothermal, and the blue ones are water wells. Some might be in use, some might not. What else? Oh, and the green are the drainage district tiles. Okay. So I tried to show the water features here. So the drainage district tiles, the wells, and then where the manure is actually going to be placed is in those shaded areas. So Longview is mostly just right there by them, and then the other facilities take up the rest. Okay, so this is a pinnacle document. This was submitted with the application. This is, generally speaking, what the site will look like. The two buildings are in green. The truck turnaround is the hatch mark. And then they will come and go egress from the gravel road, which is 170th, and then up the north south is S27. It will not be accessing from the pavement, as and our engineer is in agreement with that. That it's better if they go to 170th and out that way. Okay, so we're going to start talking about the setbacks. I'm just going to list off the setbacks. I'm not going to go through all the footage because I checked the map and they are accurate. The footage that they claim, it is accurate. So to be able to put a confinement in a spot, you have to meet a setback. To get points for the master matrix, you have to exceed that setback by certain amounts. And then there's ranges of them, and then you get points accordingly. So this one, so the top arrow, the yellow arrow, is the closest residence, and the blue one is the closest water source. So the things that they chose to ask for points for, and the committee agreed that they earn those points, was for residents, public use area, school, church, business, closest water source, critical public area, add drainage wells / sinkholes, facility with manure management plans, and the high quality water. So they met all of these setbacks plus the additional points required to get the points. And then moving on, and again, I'm just going to talk about the setbacks for now, and then we'll do the rest in a few minutes here. So I did these two together because they're so close. So section, again, Richland 28 is on the east. Richland 29 is on the west. And then they met all of those same setbacks that I just read off, with the exception of Richland 29, because they didn't have that full amount of setback, additional setback from a residence. So the other question that they added in to make up for those points was setback for their well. So the water for all three will come from drilled wells, and in that particular site, they will have to double the setback for the well to the pits in order to get those additional points. And this is what 28 looks like. So it's on the corner there, 210. And so the green again is the buildings. The truck turnaround is the hatch mark to the east. And the well then will be on the southeast corner there. This again is 28. So the closest water is shown there to the southwest, and the closest house is straight north. And this is 29. Again, same setup. The green are the buildings. The well is shown further away from that pit there, and then the hatch mark is the truck turnaround area. Closest house is straight north. All three have straight north houses that are closest. And then to the west is the closest creek or water body. Okay. Ethan talked about how we score this earlier. And we visited a long time over this, and we agreed that all three proposed CAFOs would get the points for this. Liquid manure storage structure is covered. The pit is first put in, and then the pigs are over top of the pit, and the building and roof are over that. Going by what the regulations require, we are giving them full points for having a covered manure pit structure. And that just kind of talked about, this is straight out of the application. It talked about the design, operation, and maintenance, although it probably doesn't need that because it declares it as a covered structure if it indeed is a pit underneath the building. We talked about question 17 also. Proposed manure storage structure is formed. So these are formed in place. And they have a design, operation, and maintenance plan for it. So, again, all three got the full points for that question. This is from the application, and it has all three things, the and operation, maintenance, and design. Question 20, Ethan talked about. The history of it. At first we thought, well, if you have never done this before, how can you have a history and a history of violations? But again, the attorneys advised us that yes, they get points for this because they have no history whatsoever. So again, full points for question number 20.
That brings us to the table that summarizes everything, and we agree with the points that were requested across the board. So 495 for Richland 10, 495 for Richland 28, and 470 for Richland 29. Scoring, a passing score is 440. The Board of Supervisors shall include with the adopted recommendation a copy of the master matrix analysis. The Board's adopted recommendations submitted to DNR may be based on the master matrix or comments received by the Board. I think that's very important. The comments, especially in this situation, are very important. The adopted recommendation shall include the specific reasons and any supporting documentation for the decision to recommend approval or disapproval of the application. And if you have additional comments that you would like to submit in writing, please submit them to my office, Environmental Health Department, by December 13th. Everything that we turn in is due to DNR by December 17th. Thank you. I appreciate you coming today.
Margaret, tell us about the difference between the 495 and the 470. What's the difference? You mentioned that it was...
The difference?
What's that
back? Okay, the difference, The difference is that in Richland 29, the setback to the closest house is not the the full amount of the additional setback. It's a shorter distance, so they only got 45 points for that. And then for the well, it's not drilled yet. They'll have to drill a well, and instead of 100, they're going to go 200. And if it's a shallow well, it's going to have to be 400 feet setback from the pit.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Margaret or Ethan before we hear from the applicant?
You've done a fine job of answering for reference materials in regards to details and asking about that. And I think we all saw that here. Can you tell me, in your time or to your knowledge in the county, where are these sites as they exist? How are they doing collectively? I mean, are we having violations being generated by our ABOs or our KBOs?
I do get calls about odor in the fall when land application is most commonly occurring. I do get some calls, a few calls, about dead animals being stored in the front. They haven't been picked up quickly enough. Very upsetting to see that. And then just this year, I've received a few calls on... violations, or, you know, wondering if they're violations for people land applying on frozen soil. And one CAFO had to get permission to land apply, or variance to land apply. And what has happened is because the crops came out so late, and then the ground started freezing, there's a very small window of opportunity to get the manure on the land. And so, yes, some of these folks were not injecting or knifing. They were land applying. Not a good thing. But also there's smaller folks that don't have manure management plans that do it, and they don't need a variance. And then those that are not large can also do it. So those are the typical complaints, Marty, I get. Very good question. Not over an abundance.
Violation. I mean, I get the complaint side, but I guess we turn to each other as an actionable thing to rise to the level of violation.
No, sir.
You just told us.
No, sir.
Okay. Other questions, Marty? Laura's questions or comments before we do?
None. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yes. So now I would ask for representatives from the applicant to come up and address us.
Thank you, Supervisors. So my name is Scott Henry, and I'm here on behalf of Longview Pork. And so I'd like to submit the following statement. I do have a written copy that I'll leave with you afterwards as well. But our family operates a multi-generation family farm north of Nevada, and ever since my great-grandma and grandpa Long started the farm, We've always been looking for ways to build a business that gives us the opportunity for future generations to come back to the farm and to this community. This project, we believe, gives us that opportunity, as both my youngest brother, who's here with us today, and I have returned to the family farm on a full-time basis, and my other brother, Kyle, is looking for ways to get involved as well. The three of us are the owners and the applicants, collectively through Longview Pork. We know that there are many opinions and emotions surrounding livestock production, and unfortunately, throughout this process, we've heard numerous rumors, false statements, and absurd claims that no doubt have increased people's level of concern and created fear that we feel is misplaced. After careful research and much consideration, we are confident that these sites will have minimal impact, if any, to those in close proximity, which includes my parents' house, my brother's house, my own home, which was recently built, and our business headquarters. People need to know that we are committed to doing many things that reduce the risk of impacting quality of life for those around the facilities, which include, at the very beginning of this process, identifying sites that don't just meet the setback requirements, they exceed them. I think that's one point that we definitely want to stress, is that the matrix is not a minimum. The minimum is the DNR placement. The matrix has been adopted by the county to encourage livestock producers to go in above and beyond. And so that is why we use that as a guiding principle in placing these sites. We also took into consideration prevailing winds in Iowa using some of the wind modeling technology available from Iowa State University, and found out that the prevailing winds for these locations are out of the southwest. And so we looked to place the sites where we had at least 1 mile or close to 1 mile of separation to any residence or residence property owner to the northeast of these proposed locations. We reached out to the neighbors within 1 mile of each site to make sure that we'd given them an opportunity to ask us questions directly and share any concerns that we may have, hoping to encourage dialogue in a face-to-face manner. We plan to plant trees at each site, not only to help with appearance, but also odor management, and have looked into the research that supports that from Iowa State University. We're also looking at implementing new technologies on the market, such as electrostatic fencing, pit additives, in-barn infrastructure, and others that give us confidence that we can manage these facilities well with very minimal impact to surrounding neighbors. In addition, when we look at our farm, our family farm, we think that combining manure from these facilities along with the other conservation practices that we already utilize, such as cover crops, we actually are creating a more sustainable and organic production system that allows us to be less reliant on synthetic fertilizers and excites us for the future of our industry as we look to continue to reduce potential impact from farming operations. And lastly, we know that we'll never be able to convince everyone who has an opinion on this issue, and that's fine, that's okay, we fully understand that, but what we want people to know, and you as a Board of Supervisors to know, is that we will be living and working within close proximity to these sites on a daily basis, so our interests and concerns are very much aligned with our neighbors when it comes to wanting to make sure that these sites are well managed and taken care of in order to have minimal impact. If given the chance, we're committed to making that a reality, and that is a commitment that we gladly and very firmly make as a family. Thank you for your time and consideration today and throughout this whole process to everybody involved, Margaret and the other folks.
Thank you. Questions, Mr. Hammer?
Go ahead. Okay. So you said that you reached out to neighbors within a mile. Can you kind of give me an idea about the conversations that reach out? How that went?
Yeah, it went surprisingly better than we anticipated. We knew that we would run into some pushback. However, most of the folks that we were able to speak to face-to-face, some of it ended up being over the phone. And some, when we stopped by multiple times, just weren't there, and we left our contact info and didn't reach out. But of the 50 or so conversations that we've had directly to us, there is not... the questions have been around how are we going to manage these sites well, They understand, and as you've seen today, very well understand the process, and have asked that that we share with them. And so for the most part, we were surprised at the lack of pushback that we received. We also did receive requests for people interested in helping us work in the facilities, as well as potentially helping us even apply the manure.
$5,000 per site sounds like a lot. So what exactly does that require
from the labor standpoint? Right. So $5,000 is what we were permitting. The actual, and so that would be the maximum. The actual size of the facilities or the site will be determined based upon the pig companies that we would choose to work with. And so the answer is still somewhat in the air. Directly to answer your question, the industry standards that we are going off of is on a daily chore basis, 1 hour per barn. And so if you have two barns on a site, 2 hours per day. And then when you get into the timing of bringing pigs in and out of the facility, or when they're young and you're dealing with vaccinations and other things, that time period per day may increase.
So you're a banker? We're a banker?
Nope, I'm a farmer. Yep,
you're
family
farmer. Okay, full-time. So you guys are the ones who are going to be doing a lot of work.
Yeah, it is our intention to manage the facilities. My brothers and I, we may have to supplement some of our time with additional labor, but our intention is to manage them ourselves.
Sorry.
Thank you. Is that
all? Yeah.
Okay. Marty, questions, comments?
As is articulated here in the community in the debate, because this is a really debate conversation, one of the concerns that people that are your friends, are your neighbors, people that weigh to you and like you, want to know with all the acres as to why you chose the size you did. You alluded to some of that. Can you bring us home as to why we see stars on that?
Yeah. So the first and foremost, we took that into account when siting them and placing them in areas that we feel confident have the least potential to have any impact, which takes into account basically separation distance to neighbors and prevailing winds. After that, then we looked at from a farming operation standpoint, where can that manure produced by these sites, because that is one of the reasons for doing this, is we're seeking an alternative organic fertilizer source. Where can these sites best be placed in ways that we could then access ground that we own as a family or farm with that manure? And so when we put all of that in, these sites were by far and away the best and the most well placed from both an environmental and neighborhood impact standpoint, as well as just an operational efficiency.
Having read on the Iowa State site and other places that injected manure has very good soil adherence and bake up, but we all know you're from the data, this north of the tracks runs, water moves. Can you talk a little of the science of how you have confidence of saying where you propose to inject will stay where you are placing?
Yeah, actually, that's one of the things that excites us about the project. Manure, in its own form, is actually a more stable form of fertilizer than the commercial or synthetic fertilizers that we commonly use in agriculture. And so we believe, and from the research that we have done, that by using more organic fertilizer and less synthetic fertilizer, it's actually less likely, once we're able to apply manure, than more likely.
As Margaret articulated, in an emergency, you have the ability to plan and apply. Are you constructing facilities and that would be a very last resort, if at all?
Correct. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the actual capacity of the pits that would be, which is what the form storage is, there's actually capacity for more than 1 year's worth of production. I don't know if that's 150%. It, roughly a year and a half has been what we've taken into consideration in order to make that the very last option that we would ever have to do would be to land apply. we plan to manage them well and utilize our existing farming operation and some of the tools that we have available to us with seed corn production and being able to harvest higher moisture corn early to expand that application window each fall, that that hopefully we don't run into that situation.
One of the things we've also seen here in Nevada in regards to, we're going to go really close to Nevada, and we're going to go on the top side of it, as you have on your maps.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes some unease. I find myself in my mailbox to drive across the road from a parcel that is also an open air management plan, and so far, so good. I would just say, on behalf of what I've heard, listened to, and the outreach, is the fact that you do a wonderful job. You historically have done a great job of pro cropping. Now you're moving into another facet of agriculture. I think the hope is that you are as good with it as you are with your soil, and that there's no margin for error. And I think people would like to hear you say the words that we will do everything we can every day we have to make that end accomplished.
That is our intention. We have, not to just repeat verbatim with you, but one of the things that I would share with folks is that the value set and the principles that our farm and our family have lived by today and will continue to live by give me full confidence in committing to the public that we are going to do the absolute best that we can to manage these facilities in a way that I hope that they are actually surprised at how little they notice them in the future.
I have no more questions. Thank
you. Or anything else?
Not at this time.
Okay. So now we'll move on to the public hearing. So 41 people so far have filled out a request to speak. So here's what we're going to do. So a couple things. One, anybody who has sent us an email, and by us, I mean any of the three of us, I mean Martin or James, anybody who sent us an email, that will automatically be included in the packet that we submit. You said 13th is the deadline, Margaret. We'll submit it on the 14th, which is Friday. We have to have it there by Monday. Is that those dates are right?
Yes.
So at the end of business on the 13th, we're going to take everything that we have and put it together as part of this packet. So here's what I have to date from people who have sent emails. I've responded to everybody. It's been a pretty generic response that I've given everybody, but it's just been as we've received. If you have additional comments, please send them to us and make sure it's included in the packet, and we'll make sure they're included in the packet. Here's what I'm going to ask as we go through this first round. I said 41. First time through, I'm going to ask that you keep your comments to a couple minutes. I mean, just boil it down. We'll be glad to have you come back up after everybody else has had a chance to go and talk again. But for first time through, please hit your high points and let's move on and let as many people speak as possible. I'll remind you, I'm so appreciative that we really want to endeavor to be polite and respectful and not disruptive. Okay, so with that, we'll move into the public hearing. And the first name I have is Fred Volkman. Fred Volkman?
Fred? I just told I had to spell it out to get a chair.
Okay. And that's the other thing. If at this point you don't want to speak, please avail yourself of that opportunity not to speak, and please don't come up and just ditto what's been said before you. Next is Jay Schroeder. And I should say, as you sit down, please give us your address and name.
Dave Struthers, 72865 310th Street in Collins, lifelong farmer. My father put up a confinement farrowing building in 1969 with a pit under it, added other facilities in the 70s, and in the 90s and early 2000s we added hoop barns, primarily because Dad didn't want to have to go through a lot of this stuff. June 18th, 1979 is when I became acquainted with the Henry family. You'll wonder why I remember that date. I was a soon-to-be 12-year-old 4-H'er in junior 4-H camp over at the Madrid Camping Center. Steve Henry, the father of Scott, was my counselor. He was a senior 4-H member. And I remember it was my 12th birthday because my folks sent me a birthday card at camp. Knowing the Henry family and their roles in this community, their character speaks for itself. Scott hit on a lot of the points that I was going to make about the family. If you had a family that was a shoddy operator with anything, whether it be their home, their farm, the way they took care of their pets, they're going to be a shoddy operator when it comes to a livestock facility. Longview Farms does not meet that. They're actually totally the opposite. They're about as impeccable as you can get. And here I am, a small farmer. I could be like the Ben Franklin store lobbying for Walmart to come in, because in a way you could say they're my competition, but they have a right to be here. They do things right. They have all these rules and regulations, this matrix they've met. I have no doubt in my mind they're going to do things right, and they're going to not make this so it's not noticeable. They talk about prevailing winds. We know that the southwest winds in the summertime is when you'll smell something. And they have virtually no residences downwind from this place. Northeast, Margaret talked about places to the north, directly north, or to the west. The odors are going to be minimal, if anything at all. I spoke at two different forums like this, one for a proposed hog unit near Maxwell. I heard statements that Indian Creek will be polluted, there won't be any fish in it anymore, the city of Maxwell, we won't be able to breathe. None of that has happened, and this operation's been in operating for several years now. And the family that put that unit up told me that about 2 years after they've been operating it, that almost every person that spoke in opposition came and apologized for saying anything derogatory about them. A couple of years ago, there was an operation put up about 2.5 miles south of me, a CAFO. There was statements made by opposition groups that the people would be stunk out of the area. There was a house for sale that was relatively new within 0.5 mile to the south of this operation that they'll never sell that house. Well, that house is sold, and there have been 3 houses built within 3/4 of a mile of that CAFO in the last 4 years by people that have no relationship to the operator of that CAFO. So if these things were so horrible, these things wouldn't be happening. So basically what I want to summarize is you look at the quality and the character of the people. If you had somebody that didn't pay their taxes, that had the junkiest car in town, that didn't give a rip about their community, then I'd be saying, I really look into this really, really hard. But we don't have that with Longview Farms and the Henry family.
Thank you. Next, I have Diane Rowe.
Good afternoon. My name is Diane Rugg. I live at 17331 670th Avenue, 1 mile due east of Richland 10 proposed site. I'm a terrible public speaker. I'm sorry. The prevailing wind in the summer may be out of the south, but the other 49% of the time it's out of the west. So that's going to be coming at my house. I know hogs stink. I know manure stink. I know the fumes they emit from these barns are toxic. And I just don't want to be in that lane. And as far as I don't know the Henrys, they are wonderful, reputable farmers, but they're not going to own these hogs. They're not going to dictate the process of how they're dealt with or the dead animals are dealt with. These are all open questions that haven't been answered. Is who's going to own the hogs? What is their record? And how can we be assured that I can't say that the idea of open burning of deceased hogs is not going to be acceptable. You know, my husband and I have worked hard. We had to meet the county standards that are above and beyond any other place in this state to find a place to build a house. You know, the acreage requirements, or it has to be pre-existing. We found pre-existing. You know, we've worked to make it a nice home. We know our neighbors. I don't think that the Henrys actually qualify as my neighbors. It's just not welcome in our neighborhood, and I would just assume that you deny it and or the Henrys pull their applications, because we're at a tipping point in this state. We're going to have an entire generation of children that are never going to understand that Iowa didn't smell like this. It's horrid. You go north of here, the environment is terrible. If we can't stop this in Story County, where can we draw it? You know, who's going to be able to draw it? We are a population center. We should have more control and say so over what happens in our county. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Next, I have Kim Stevens.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Kim Stevens. I live at 65207 Indian Creek Trail, south of Nevada, off of S-27. I also want it said for the record that I am speaking on behalf of my husband, James Stevens, who grew up here in Nevada and is a 1987 graduate of Nevada High School. My son, Paul Stevens, who will graduate from Nevada High School in 2030. And my friend, Mindy Buck, who is a Nevada resident and has a master's degree in hydrology. My deepest concern is water quality, specifically my water quality. East Indian Creek runs through my property. We enjoy using the creek for all sorts of recreational activities, ones that now seem threatened by agricultural pollution. I understand that the manure management plan is supposed to protect us, but a couple concerns come to mind. First, the plan itself is self-reported, with little to no enforcement. We won't know things are broken until we begin to experience problems. My second concern is with the amount of manure that's created each day. Each pig produces, and this is conservatively, 9 pounds of waste. This is as reported by the University of Wisconsin Extension Service. I didn't just pull that figure out of air. Humans, on average, produce around 1 pound of waste. With 15,000 pigs going just a few miles away from my town, that is the equivalent of moving 135,000 people into this area. And all of that waste has to go somewhere, and it's going to go on our ground. Now, I've heard the Henrys speak to say that they are going to do the right thing. And I believe that they have a right to make their living. I am absolutely pro-business, and I am pro-farmer. However, without a clear plan about what they're going to do, because I did not hear a clear plan, and the DNR, which lacks any sort of enforcement tool to make sure that the Henrys are actually doing what they've publicly stated they're going to do today, I am supposed to take this on good faith. I don't. Based on the information provided by my friend Mindy, she studied West Indian Creek, and West Indian Creek is an impaired waterway. With no point sources available to attribute to the pollution in the creek, the source of the E. coli in the creek is from manure application. When I went to bed last night, I received this letter on my pillow from my 11-year-old son. I would like to read it into the record. Dear government, why are you destroying my creek property with the pollution of thousands of hogs? Does it really benefit our lives? If so, how? Will I really never get to play in my creek again, never get to chase and catch minnows again? Do I have to start treating my creek as a biohazard? My family and I would wade up and down the creek in the summer. We would laugh and play, splash each other, and swim. Will you really take that joy, that happiness, that tradition of playing there away? Why? Sincerely, Paul Stevens, grade 5, Nevada Middle School. One final thought. Last night, Supervisor Chitty made a comment at the Nevada City Council meeting that there were a lot of out-of-towners in attendance, myself included. I graduated from the Air Force Academy in 2003, and while we were there, we had to learn a lot of quotes by a lot of leaders. One quote that I learned was, "The day your soldiers stop bringing you your problems is the day that you've stopped leading them. They've either lost the confidence that you can help them or have decided you don't care. Either case is a failure of leadership." That was Colin Powell. I think, supervisors, you have to ask us why we were going to the city of Nevada. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Catherine B. Fromm.
I'm Catherine Fromm. I own 45 acres in the county. I've spent a lot of time on water quality, as I've stated here before. I believe this is a public health issue. It involves the citizens of Nevada and possibly the children. We have an increase in asthma in this society. It is quite possible that this particular operation will affect the children of Nevada. So I'm going to just describe a specific situation. We have an increase in eosinophils invading the lungs. This is from pollution in the atmosphere, and I know all too well about this. It is a family problem. A drug has been approved and is available for what is called eosinophilic asthma, and that is asthma that is an extreme condition. And we have, you know, ads on television about this problem. The cost of a shot for this problem, and it basically will affect children, is $10,000 a shot. The shot has to be administered at what you call a fusion center, which is a place where you compound drugs, and they charge $1,500 a shot. Now, obviously, if we have children who have asthma, they won't necessarily have that particular problem. But there is this condition, which is, if it's refractory to the other medications, that will be the cost, $10,000 a shot. So who pays then? Medicare? Insurance? Then insurance goes up. And we are to believe that we should do this so that this family can have a nice family life on a farm. I don't believe that is really appropriate, particularly for facilities which are 1 mile north of Nevada. I know that, you know, family farms hang on in this society is a great goal. Everybody wants to be supportive. But I believe at some points we're not talking about the desires of a family or individuals. We're talking about the health of the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Next, I have Margaret Kinney. Thank you, Barbara. Next, I have Jessica Finn, Spears. Jessica Spears.
Hi, y'all. my name is Jessica Spears. I reside at 4915 Schubert Street, West Ames over there. So it seems like I'm kind of a little bit out of the way on this issue, but my parents do still reside in Medford, so I make frequent trips there, and being an Ames grad, I got a lot of friends in Colo, Nevada, Fernald, that I would like to continue to visit and have our children growing up together and having recreational activities around Nevada. I didn't have a chance to blow it up. This is a picture of me and my grandfather with some of his hogs. And in my mind, this is what a family farm looks like, a family interacting with a farm. The pigs are seeing sunlight. That's something that's probably only going to happen on certain occasions out at Mr. Henry's developments there. For a little bit of background, I am originally from Kentucky in South Carolina, so I'm no stranger to agriculture, particularly swine. My parents chose to move to Iowa in 2000 when my father took a position at Mary Greeley. He's a physician over there. Prior to that, he was a veterinarian. My sister got her master's degree in public health and wellness. She is now envious of my ability to live in Iowa while she is out in Phoenix. I don't understand that one entirely, but her husband is from Storm Lake, and they are aware of what could be coming down the road.
I just have a couple things I want to bring up here. My biggest concern is the growth of Story County. Rick, you ran on Story Grows, right? Am I correct there?
Growth of Story County.
Yeah. So we've brought in Burke, who's expanding, and as you all know, anything that manufactures food needs clean water and clean air. It's not just a want, it's a need for them to continue to manufacture and grow and expand. They're going to be bringing more jobs in. We're going to be growing. So we're going to be looking at building homes. And smaller families that are going to be employed by Burke are going to be looking for lower-income housing that is typically built on the north end of Nevada as opposed to the larger acreages to the south. So I just have a couple quick studies here that I've highlighted. A 2001 study, national property appraisal firm, found that property values around CAFOs can decline by anywhere from 50% to 90% due to diminished marketability, loss of enjoyment, use, or exclusivity. And in 2002, a study found that antibiotics in nearly a third of ground and surface water samples taken near hog CAFOs, two-thirds of samples in the poultry, showed that the manure lagoons can leach antibiotic-resistant bacteria and contaminants into the waterways there. And the American Medical Association now opposes the use of antibiotics in farm animals that are not sick. In addition to that, we have nuisance cases that have come up recently in Iowa. 2002, a nuisance case ordered a pork company to pay over $100,000 to homeowners when their homes dropped $50,000 in values after a new CAFO was built. The plaintiff had alleged that the CAFO attracted bugs and harmed their physical and emotional health. And I've yet to hear even a possible proposal on Mr. Henry doing anything about the flies and other vermin that it will attract. But I have heard he's interested in taking care of the odor. High nitrate concentrations in drinking water can cause blue baby syndrome and may contribute to developmental defects in fetuses and miscarriages in pregnant women. I'm happy to surrender all these studies to you all if you want to go through them yourselves. But I think there's a lot of evidence here that this is going to hurt the growth and development of Story County, and I hope that the supervisors, even if it is a symbolic or non-binding decision, you can at least hold your heads high and say you tried.
Thank you, Jessica. Next is Lou Spence.
Good afternoon. Luke Spence, 732 J Avenue in Nevada. I'm also on the Nevada City Council, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself and not necessarily the council. I know City Administrator Marson is waiting in the wings in the back to give a statement on behalf of the city and the council in general. The most common response I've received or read from the Board of Supervisors is that the state law is very clear and that you don't have a legal say and that the current code does not recognize modern concerns to allow for more local control. If you truly want to fix the issues with this process, whether the timeline, the matrix, the county's level of control, you should recommend a disapproval for this proposal. Continuing to recommend approval when you have acknowledged that the process has many flaws and is outdated only enables a broken system to continue. You have the power to start the process of getting these laws and the matrix fixed today. I ask that you do so by recommending disapproval of the proposed hog confinements that we have today. I have three kids, as many of you know. On occasion, they may spend more time than they should on an electronic device like an iPad, a video game, something along like those lines. If I threaten to take away their time with those electronic devices, if maybe they don't clean their room, or if they don't put away the dishes or feed the dog, the key is not the threat that I made to try to get them to do their chores. The key is the follow-through on my part and actually taking it away when they don't hold up to their end of the deal. And I think the same holds true here today. As a parent, and my wife grew up in Nevada, we moved here 3 years ago to come back to Nevada to raise our kids here. I selfishly hope that they all decide to live here in Nevada so that I can be living in the same town as them as I grow older. But the reality is such that sometimes the birds leave the nest and find their own tree to start their own life. What I hope for them is that Nevada and Story County can be a model for what they look for when they choose a community to raise their family, in a community that is safe, clean, with good schools, and leadership that will always advocate for and have a vision for making life better for their town that they choose to live in. You can send a message to our state legislators and the DNR today that the system is broken and needs to be fixed, and Story County will wait until they take action before you go any further in approving hog confinements in Story County today. Thank you.
Thanks, Luke. Now I have Grant Duell.
How are you doing? Name is Grant Duell. Address is 19835 640th Avenue, which puts our residence basically just over a mile from both sites 28 and 29. So wanted to get my comments on the record today. We do have concerns about the sites, although we understand the Henry's desire to continue to improve their family farm and provide a source of income for their family. So not and also commend them for meeting the matrix points that they have. So I think they've done a good job. Just wanted to make sure, get our concerns on being close to these two sites. We are concerned about the potential for odors. We are basically straight north of Site 28 and northeast of Site 29, so the prevailing wind from April to October will be in our direction. Based on what the Henrys have said about controlling odors, we'd just like to stress that we would fully want that to take place. The vegetation growth, the tree rows, any other things to reduce that odor, as that would be in our direction for the time of the year when we're most likely to be outside or have our windows open. Other concern is about traffic on 640th Avenue. That gravel road already gets more than its share of traffic as people use that as a route into Nevada. And so we're a little concerned about increased truck traffic on that road. So anything we could do to minimize that truck traffic, there are five residential areas north on 640th from that site 28. And lastly would be our property values. Again, we are within about that mile radius of both of these sites, so that is a concern as our desires to potentially sell our property as our kids grow and probably move, and we probably look at transitioning somewhere. So the investment that we have in our property, we'd like to maintain that. So just like for the record, that the Henrys would do their due diligence at maintaining odors, maintaining visibility, etc., on these two sites. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, Grant, thank you very much. Next, Linda Merkin. Sure. So everybody could please speak up and pull the microphone just a little closer. Hopefully some people can hear in the hallway.
Hello, I'm Linda Merkin. I live at 17185 GW Carver Avenue, Gilbert. That's Section 8 Franklin Township. So I live in the township that's directly east of Richland, or west of Richland, excuse me. I have an appreciation for how difficult these meetings are for everybody. It's difficult for the people who are going to have to make a decision based on all the things they have heard. It's difficult for the people who are the applicant, and it's difficult for people who have some concerns, some very big concerns. For those of you who are making the decision, this is your tough day. You will make a decision. You will go on from today to make other decisions on other issues. For people in this room today who have concerns, I believe are legitimate concerns, they're going to have a lot of tough days ahead and a lot of tough years. A lot of them are going to say, if this comes to pass, if our worst fears come to pass, what am I going to be able to do? I may have all my money in my land. I may not be able to leave my land. I may not want to leave my land. What health impacts are going to come? What other impacts are going to come? These concerns are real, and they're not going to go away tomorrow after the decision is made. They may just start after the decision is made, and people are going to go through some very, very difficult times, and I think that they're going to be harmed. You've been presented with evidence, and you're going to be presented with more evidence as well as anecdotes. I would really ask that you think about people in terms of the anecdotes, and that you base your decisions on whatever evidence you hear. Now, Ethan, I missed a little bit of his presentation, but here's my understanding of the code. If you folks say yes, the DNR does not rescore the master matrix. That's it. If you say no, but you say you don't change the score, but you say you have concerns, that doesn't change anything either. The concerns will be there. I'm not saying it's not important to address concerns, but they're not going to change what happens. Okay. What you need to do, if you feel that any of the scores in believe me, we have great staff here at the county. I'm not knocking them. But if you feel that there might be any doubt in any of the scores, I'm saying any doubt from what you hear or see, you can take those points away. And then the DNR rescores the master matrix. More expert eyes on the applications and on the process. Now, you need to make that decision based on the rules, based on the statute. But I'm just saying, we say we don't have very much that we can do. That's right. We don't have very much. But that is the one thing that can be done that now, through the end result of these applications, that could make a difference. And if you feel that that is the way to go, if you see the evidence that maybe there's something that you have some doubt about, you need to take those points away today. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Next, I have Deborah Thompson.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm just gonna scrolling. Deborah Thompson, I live at 16125 670th Avenue, McCallsburg. We are, as a crow flies, 1 mile northeast of the Richland 10 proposed site. As he stated, that wind's coming my direction. I currently live with a CAFO a half a mile directly north of us. Now, even taking into consideration the prevailing winds, we smell that. I no longer leave home and leave my windows open because I have come home to a house that smells completely like hog manure. I no longer hang my clothes out to dry because I've come home and had to rewash everything. We hear them fighting. I would hope that I would not hear the ones that are a mile away, but we do hear them. We do not plan family get-togethers at our home anymore. We kind of wing everything because we've had to cancel because of the smell. I don't want my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren in that stench. My great-granddaughter is fifth generation going to school here in Nevada. They live
here. My son lives here. My son lives in the Vincent Addition on the north side of town. These two proposed sites are just a shade over a mile. My grandson is a preemie. He has health issues. I look at the things that are going into the air and how that might affect him. I have asthma, which has worsened over the years. And I can't prove it, but I suspect it's because of the emissions from my 3,000 neighbors to the north. I would urge the board to consider the long-ranging health concerns for the citizens of Nevada, as well as those of us who are close to the existing sites. And I would ask you to join us in saying no more CAFOs. We need, there comes a time when the good of the majority outweighs the needs and wants of the minority. And if good intentions were money, we'd all be rich. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Susie Petra.
Susie Petra, Ames, Iowa. The master matrix was drafted over a decade and a half ago. We know that it has now failed Iowans. It fails to adequately protect the rights of all Iowans. It fails to protect our health, our land values, our air quality, and our water. The master matrix is a scoring system, as you heard. It has 44 questions. And though a perfect score would result in 880 points, only 440 points are needed to get a passing grade. As an educator, I have to ask, and I'm serious, since when is 50% a passing grade? Adding insult to injury, the applicants get to choose which questions to answer. And when they gather their minimum required points, they are not required to answer any further questions. So take note, many, many of the questions on that matrix are exceedingly easy in order to score those minimum points. However, questions on the matrix which impact your health and mine, the health of our children, and our elderly are almost never answered. For instance, questions regarding air quality monitoring or installation and maintenance of filters to reduce odors or demonstrating community support or implementing a worker safety and protection plan or adopting an approved comprehensive nutrient management plan. Also, the current matrix, as you know, has a glaring omission. It does not have a question requesting that the applicant have a risk management plan. So what is the plan when there is a manure spill, our water is polluted, and our fish are killed? I have a map of Story County, but we can't project it. So here's a map of Iowa, a CAFO map. We already have in Story County 34 medium and large CAFOs. This number does not include the smaller confinement facilities which dot Iowa and dot Story County. They have few regulations and don't have to file applications, so the DNR is not even able to accurately count their numbers. This matrix, this pass-fail test, has most definitely failed Iowans, and it fails our Story County residents. The current system is weighed heavily in favor of the livestock industry, not in supporting the health and quality of life of our residents. Adding to this offensive, unjust process, the county has only 30 days to review applications, call for a public hearing, conduct the hearing, and make recommendations to the DNR whether or not to approve that matrix. Supervisors say their hands are tied, they're probably tired too, and there's nothing they can do. But actually, there are a number of things that they can do. Number one, they can deny the applications based on the incomplete or vague answers submitted on the matrix and based on the solid concerns voiced by Story County residents here today in those emails. Because these additional CAFOs are not in the best interest of the community that the supervisors were elected to serve. Two, they can take points off the submitted matrix and give it a failing grade, which would flag the application to the DNR.
Three, they could ask the Henrys to withdraw their proposals and go back to being a family farm as opposed to industrial farming. And four, they could decide to delay their decision today while they further consider citizen concerns. Here's the real issue. We in Story County, as do all Iowans, have the right to breathe clean air, to drink clean water, to recreate in uncontaminated waters. We have the right to protect our property values and our health, to enjoy quality of life. This is the job of government. It's your job. Thank you.
Next, I have Jim Freeberg.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Jim Freeberg. I live in Nevada at 539 Oak Lane. I just come back from Florida for a few days for business, but I had this hearing and I thought, well, I wanted to come to this because I feel very strongly about it. I've known, well, first of all, I've been in Nevada since 1964 and been associated with Hearst Farm Management. And I've had the opportunity to manage a lot of farms all over north central Iowa and to be involved with agriculture a lot of different directions. And I will stand here and I'll confidently say that there isn't a better farming operation in Iowa than what Longview Farms and Henrys do. And I say that from the management standpoint and the detail that they do. When Scott talked about what he was going to do, they will do it. And you don't have to worry about dead pigs laying out along the side of the road. You won't see that in this place. They're going to take care of it. As far as the smell, you know, I was raised on a livestock farm, and yeah, you have smell with livestock, especially in the old days. And you know, you had the feedlots and everything, and the water runs off, and it goes down the creek, and all of that water, you don't contain it. Here we've got a new system now that we've been using in the recent years. It's so much better. It's confinement. You're controlling your manure. Dermot Hayes over at Iowa State is one of our leading ag professors over there. I've heard him say a number of times that if there's ever a place to raise livestock, it's here in Iowa where we can use the manure for the organic matter. And what better way you can do that? And so here we have this opportunity here. Yeah, they want to expand. I know right where they're putting this, and I don't have a worry at all about smell from that because the way they will do things. But I will also say that I've been involved with a number of confinement facilities, and some of them, they've changed. The technology is a lot better now than what we used to have. But I know I have one down by Collins right next to a farm that I have, and there's absolutely no smell from that. I've been around there when they're even taking the manure out and applying it on the fields, and they do it so well. It's you got to give people credit, you know, and I hear a lot of fear, and I'm sorry that it's there, but I don't think they have to worry about it, and so I support it 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next, I have Jack Kroger. Jack?
Good day. The climate for change is upon us now. What will you do about it? Story County residents are being told that they must capitulate, accommodate, and tolerate another assault on their air, water, land, and lives as yet another capo imprisoning 15,000 living, breathing, intelligent animals is built. No one likes to be told what to do and how to do it. I don't. But. So here it is at point blank range. No, thou shalt not condone the construction of another hog factory in Story County. And yes, I can hear those who want to build the CAFO, but I have a right to make a living however I choose, and besides, it's all legal. No, no you do not, especially when your choice profoundly affects people and the animals involved. And it's besides, just because it's legal. Because Big Pig, Big Ag, Alec, and the Farm Bureau wrote and passed the laws that make it so. Of course it's legal. My wife's 150-acre family farm has been the place for raising pigs the free-range way for a long time, and so I know it is possible to do so profitably. Because Iowa's powers that be have not said no to Big Ag, Big Pig, and Big Pork for more than 35 years, Iowa is now just a giant 56,000 square mile hog manure sewer. As county supervisors, you may not have the authority to stop this capo here and now, today, but you can initiate change. The very least all three of you can do today is say, no, you will not go to confinement for the 15,000 hogs. Complacency is complicity. You wouldn't do it to your family pet. Why do it to pigs?
Thank you, Jack. Next, I have Mark Edwards.
It's a hard act to follow.
You didn't hold on to the lure this time.
My name is Mark Edwards, and I live in Boone County, 1265, 216th Lane, and I've retired from the DNR after 30 years, and I've spent considerable amount of time going into this issue. And the one issue that I'd like to bring up today, Jack covered, was from the particular animal level. But when I look at the larger context, what I've learned about where I live in a state where 98% has been given to agricultural roads and cities. I live in a state that two-thirds of the state is covered in only two species. And if you understand any biology whatsoever, you know that can't support any other species. Okay, so we can continue going down this road. And even whether you're talking about building housing, as you were in the previous issue, or you're talking about CAFOs, you have to put that into some kind of context. And the context is we can't keep doing what we're doing. And we now are competing for the bottom in the United States for the worst water, erosion. We could go on and on. Air, things are just getting worse and worse. So at some point, we're going to have to turn around and go in a different direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Pastor Barfoot, maybe?
It's Tosita Barfoot. I go by Sid, for those who know me. My address is 4404 Toronto Street in Ames. I don't buy meat that's raised with antibiotics. It's not because I'm against eating animals. I'm not. That's what a lot, if most animals do. They eat each other. I do it because I understand biology. And the way I understand it is it's still the industry standard here in the United States to feed low-level antibiotics to our livestock. That is a recipe for antibiotic-resistant bacteria. It's not a matter of if these livestock will be colonized with antibiotic-resistant bacteria, it's when. So if you look at the labeling of meat in our grocery store, it is a biohazard. And I choose not to bring that biohazard into my home. However, people who live near CAFOs did not get to have a choice. These bacteria spread through the water, through contact with people who work in CAFOs, and we found recently they spread through the air. So even if you take care of the odor issue, your proposed site is still a public health hazard.
Now, I want to speak a minute about economics. Pork is one of the most vertically integrated industries in agriculture. You will not own your pigs. From what I've heard from you and people who know you, you want to do the right thing. My question is, are they going to pay you enough per head of hog for you to do the right thing? Are you going to be financially able to tell them no? We can't bring our facilities to capacity or beyond because we cannot responsibly manage the manure that results. And finally, I want to say that here in Iowa, we have the best land in the world. We grow the corn that pigs eat here. Meat consumption in the United States is declining. And I think it's in large part because we here in the United States see the real impact of industrial meat farming. And we're making our consumer choices as a result. Demand on the market for pork is going up because of other countries. Other countries want our cheap meat. And that low price in meat is being paid for by externalities to our communities. But we, as citizens of the best farmland in the world, we have the leverage to put our foot down and say no. If we're going to feed the world the meat that you want to eat, we're going to do it the right way. So, with that, I encourage you on the Board of Supervisors to do all you can to do the right thing. Thank you.
Mark Harris is who I am next.
My name is Mark Harris. I live at 6037 190 Street in Milford Township. And I was here 4.5 years ago, and again, standing in opposition to more sightings of CAFOs with the shaman, Luke Shaman. I have to say that living a mile south of Luke, I haven't noticed that much smell, but I'm also directly south, and that is not a prevailing wind. However, right across the road, 200 feet from my house, is 80 acres that he does farm as a rental, and it's part of his manure management. And beyond situations beyond his control, I've witnessed a call to the county, and Margaret called DNR 3 years ago this month when manure was spread on the ground in December, and then we had that torrential rain that happened in that December, and it essentially formed a lake on the south side of E2990 Street on West Indian Creek. And I was concerned because right after manure application, huge amount of water, standing water, while the creek drained, ran through the city of Nevada. And this is what one of my issues that I sat here and talked about is that the main waterway through the city of Nevada is West Indian Creek. And I was concerned, again, with the application of manure on fields in that drainage area and the water quality of the city of Nevada. I object mostly to CAFOs in large part because of the manure issue. I don't believe manure is kind of not fully stating what we're actually talking about. According to the CDC, it's not just the waste product of pigs, but it's the antibiotics, antifungus, the hormone possibilities, the chemicals for cleaning, all this kind of thing. So in a sense, saying manure is not really acknowledging what the ingredients completely are. 4.5 years ago, I submitted a a study from the Veterans Hospital in Iowa City and that they did in 2014, where they studied patients coming in with bacteria, or, you know, staphylococcus-resistant bacteria. And their study showed that people working and living within a mile of a CAFO had almost three times the average of infections or bacteria living on their bodies than the standard of the population. So we know, again, that this bacteria is in a higher population because of that. I also object because I believe in science, and I believe in evolution, and I believe that these cesspits are evolutionary cesspools. We are creating conditions where bacteria and other organisms have to learn to adapt. And over time, we've found that this resistance happens. I believe that as we spread this on the soil, we are creating conditions that also require life to adapt. The soil, as the previous person mentioned, is some of the best in the world. And it's in the best in the world because it was developed over since the glaciers came through nearly 8,000 to 10,000 years ago. It's taken that long to develop. It's developed because of the life in the soil. It isn't sterile. It's full of life. And that life is what gives us life. We are part of the soil. We know now that we have the biome of our intestines comes from the earth that we live on. And what are we doing to the earth that we receive this biome? Every living creature in our environment receives the same kind of inoculation from the earth to allow them to live. And we are creating conditions. We don't know what the result will be ultimately. I also believe that we are at economic risk, as the previous person said. If you're following news in the swine industry, you know what's happening in Asia, across Eurasia, with the African swine fever situation there. They are really freaking out from what I'm reading in the news. And I don't know, maybe you're reading the same thing. And I presume from what I've been reading on what's happening in the United States is that we're gearing up for the eventual reality that this might hit us. And we all know what happened with the bird flu situation that ran through Iowa. What are we going to do if the African swine flu hits Iowa? Are we prepared to deal with the 20 million plus pig bodies that we might end up with? What I fear in this environment is that we ignore the science. We seem to be ignoring the science of climate change, the science of the health departments that are telling us that bacterial resistance is not a positive thing for us. We are in an environmental regulatory situation where the EPA water regulations are being proposed to be decimated. So what we have right now, even though we have one of the worst water systems in the United States, it may even get worse as we have less regulation. Climate change is real. We can't predict exactly how it's going to affect Iowa, but we know it's changing. And one of the largest challenges to environmental change or climate change is our farming practices. CAFO farming contributes to the climate change issues, the fact that we're reducing the amount of carbon that's in the soil, not increasing the amount of carbon in the soil, is also an issue that's creating a lot of the climate issues that we're having. And the industry itself is totally dependent on fossil fuels. Can you imagine how many miles of truck miles and tractor miles it takes to move the manure and the 42 million hogs that go to slaughter every year in this state? It's totally dependent on fossil fuels. I know that what I say here is not going to change anybody's minds. What I hope is people start researching the science that I have. What I hope is that Iowa creates, for the public interest, a clearinghouse of information related to this. I hope that we have more public research related to public impact that's available easily. I hope we have science in the public interest and not in just the interest of the economics of pig farming. I asked for a statewide moratorium on citing more CAFOs. At 42 million plus pigs going to market, we are actually setting ourselves up for an economic risk, whether it's through disease or politics or China deciding not to buy from us. I believe we need a new application process that's based on current evidence and that requires more evidence to pass. Thank you for your time.
Next is Cheryl Benson.
Cheryl Benson, 707 Burnett Avenue in Ames, Iowa, with several friends in Burnett, Nevada. Yeah, okay. And up until recently, a family member who lived all of her 103 years in Nevada. So fond memories of this community. As a citizen of this county, I appreciate what the applicant said earlier about their intentions with this application. I am a part of a family business, so appreciate the value of that. I am also, earlier in my life, married into a family farm that had both crops and hogs. So that's my context that I'm coming from. That being said, I really have some real serious concerns about this application. There are 44 questions, as we know, only